Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
When I first came here, or actually over to the Woodruff is where I started, one of the things that appealed to me the most was the fact that this is not a passive teaching, okay? This is not a religion that says, okay, God, do with me whatever you want. It's not a place where we hope for the best and take whatever we get. Instead, this is a philosophy, it's not a religion, where we recognize that the way our life turns out is not up to God, it's actually up to us. Because as the Christian New Testament says so clearly, the gift is already given. That's a very powerful statement, but we have to know what it means. The gift they're talking about is the gift of life and everything that goes with it. It's a gift of intelligence. It's a gift of our free will. It's a gift of our ability to make choices. It's the gift of a world full of everything we need to create whatever we want. It's the gift of all the different spiritual laws that allow our thoughts to become things like the law of attraction, the law of compensation, and all the other spiritual laws. And it's the gift of people to share our life with, which, of course, is the gift of love. Now, these are all gifts that we have all received simply by virtue of being born. On the other hand, if you look around, and we're all out in the world during the week, you may also notice that there are a lot of people in the world who seem to be missing things that they would really like to have, which is actually kind of strange because that means that they're running around, wearing themselves out, in some cases desperately trying to find things out there that they've already got, in here, okay? They're looking out there for things like money and health and success and love and time and energy and fun and all that. And if it wasn't so sad, it'd actually be kind of funny. But even sadder than that are those people who appear to have resigned themselves to living a life where they're never, ever going to have the things that they really and truly want. These people who have actually given up on life, who seem to be kind of stuck in place where they're sort of getting by, but they're not growing. We all know people like that. Their life isn't all that bad, but it's not all that great either, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Now, it isn't that they don't want a better life. I mean, you know, we'd all prefer to have a wonderful, loving relationship instead of being alone or being with somebody that we don't feel connected to. Everybody wants that, right? Sure we do. We all want to go on that vacation to Rome or Paris or Hong Kong or something instead of schlepping off to Callaway Gardens, you know, for a weekend every year or two. We all want to have a job that excites us when we get up and go straight to work instead of one that's sucking the life out of us. And we all want to be healthy and look good, okay? We don't want to walk by the mirror with our eyes closed, okay? We want to just sort of be, you know, we want all of these things. All of us do. Any rational person would. But even though we may know other people are accomplishing these things, people who, by the way, who are not nearly as smart and talented and good-looking as we are, we still can't quite seem sometimes to get ourselves together enough to do whatever needs to be done to make things happen in our life that we would like to happen. Now, why? That's a very good question. But the most common reason that I have found is procrastination. It really is. It's not because we're lazy. It's not because we're too busy. It's not because we can't decide what we want. It's because we're waiting for something else to happen first. That's how a lot of people live their life, okay? So if there's anything in your life that you want to have or do or accomplish that you just can't seem to get any closer to it, my question for you this morning, and for me, because I fall into this trap too, what are you waiting for? That's the title of the talk. Now, there's an old question that some of you have probably heard if you've been in this teaching long enough. I first heard this question, read it in a book by a man named Stephen Levine, who wrote a book called A Year to Live. And the basic theme of the book was, if you only had a year to live, what would you do? So in this book, he asked the question, if you knew you were dying and you could only make one phone call, who would you call and what would you say? Pretty good question, right? But then he says, why are you waiting? Why are you waiting? Very, very interesting. I mean, that's always a good question for us to consider, because none of us knows when our time is going to come, and most of us would probably not call our broker or our lawyer, okay? I would assume we'd obviously call one special person in our life, our spouse, our partner, our mother, our father, our children, whatever, and we would tell them what? Tell them I loved them. Right? I mean, that's, after all, that's all that really matters. But for the purpose of today's discussion, let's ratchet this question down a little so it's not quite so dramatic. Let me ask it this way. If you knew that one phone call, okay, everybody's got a phone here, right? Everybody's got a phone with them. I'm betting money on it, okay? If you knew that one phone call could possibly set things in motion in your life in such a way that your life would absolutely blossom and take off from that moment forward, would you be willing to make that call? Now, if I asked for a show of hands, I would bet virtually every person here would say, you bet, I would do it. But think for a minute whether we would or not. I know in my case, I think my first reaction would be, as a born skeptic, it depends. It depends, okay? I want to know what might happen if I make that phone call. I want you to tell me that. Would the changes that come be positive changes or negative changes? Would there be more pleasure in my life or would there be more pain? And what kind of a guarantee are you going to give me that it works? Which, of course, we know the answer is there are no guarantees, except that if we do nothing, then nothing's going to change. You can guarantee that. You see, as hard as it is to believe, there are a lot of people in this world who are unable or unwilling to pick up the phone and make even that one simple call. And we're using the phone call as a metaphor, of course. Now, the reason may be fear. It may be apathy. It may be inertia. Whatever they're feeling, this mental and emotional and spiritual paralysis that they're feeling, which is really what it is like an anchor that's holding their life in place, like Gorilla Glue or that tape they're advertising that'll make anything stick. You know, it's holding them very firmly in place, which is fine if they're happy with the way things are, but if they aren't, it makes it really, really hard to bear. You see, we all have dreams, every single one of us, that we are waiting to set in motion. Some of them are big dreams, some of them not so big. We all have this desire within us to do things, to create things, to make a difference in our own life and in the world. But first, we have to do some things, all right? And the key word here is do, all right? First, we have to recognize what those dreams are. And there are a lot of people who don't want to face what their dreams are because they're afraid they might not get them. Then second, we have to admit without fear or embarrassment or compromise that these dreams are important to us. That's second. But the final step, the third step, the most important is that we ourselves, maybe without any help, maybe without encouragement, maybe even without the remotest possibility that it may work or proof that we're doing the right thing, we may need to do something deliberate to set in motion the action part of the creative process. We may have to do something before it'll start in motion. Now, what we do might be something really big, and those kind of decisions can be really difficult. But in most cases, the thing we need to do may not be that big at all. Maybe it just seems big. Maybe it seems a little intimidating because we've turned it into this mental and emotional barrier that we don't believe we can overcome. So instead of taking the risk, we just sort of turn around and go home. A lot of people do that. And then we spend the rest of our life thinking about what might have been if only we had made just a little bit more effort, all right? If only we had pushed a little harder or been a little bit braver. We think about that for the rest of our life. There's a writer I really like, a New Thought writer. His name is Alan Cohen. Anybody familiar with him? His first book was The Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore. It was a really great book, 30, 35 years ago, a classic. He had another book that I like even more, and it's called I Had It All the Time. And he tells this great story about one of his larger workshops a number of years ago, where in the workshop he asked people to talk openly about some dream or some desire that they were waiting to put into action. So a woman, back in the middle of the crowd, probably several hundred people there, she raised her hand, and she said that she had been wanting to ask a certain man to a party the following week. But because she was afraid of being rejected, she kept putting it off. And the party was only 7 days away. So Cohen turned to the seminar manager at the door, whatever, and he said, "Do you have a phone she could use?" This was before cell phones. And the guy says, "Sure, we got one out in the hall." So Cohen turns to the woman. And he said, "Would you be willing to call him now?" And she said, "Now?" And he said, "Yes, now." And so she said, "Okay." Okay, I had to practice that. Like that, pretty good. So anyway, 10 minutes later, she comes back into the room with a big grin on her face, and she says, "Well, it looks like I got me a date," which is great, all right? But that's not all. 1 year later, she came back to the same seminar with her new husband, who was a man that she had called at the seminar the year before. Everybody go, "Aw, isn't that cute?" Okay, great. Now, it's a cute story. All right. Not only because of how it turned out, but because it would have been oh so easy for her to simply say, "No, I'll make the call when I get home. I'll make it later." Okay. But what I like the most about this story is the fact that it was such a tiny little thing that produced such a big result. Such a big result. That's the kind of decisions our life is made of more often than not. I mean, sure, we have big decisions to make. Do I stay in this job or do I leave? Do I stay in this relationship or do I leave? Should I buy this house? Should I have the surgery? All right. But all of these big decisions are usually preceded by a bunch of smaller and much easier decisions had we made them at the time. At the time. Now, some of these decisions are little things that we decide to do or not do, but some of our so-called big decisions become more and more difficult because of all the little decisions that we failed to make along the way while we were waiting, okay? And as we all know, you know the old saying, not making a decision is a decision, okay? We've all heard that. That's why when we simply decide to do nothing, nothing is usually what we end up with. Now, think for a moment about how many different things we find ourselves waiting for. Let me go through a few of these. One of my favorites is we wait until we have enough time, right? Okay? Which is pretty funny if you think about it, because I don't know of a single person throughout recorded history who has added more than any time to the 24 hours in a day by waiting. Nobody, okay? I mean, it's not like a wireless plan where you can not use the time and then you got extra minutes to do stuff later on, that kind of thing, okay? Either we use it or lose it, obviously, okay? Now, we also find ourselves waiting for not just more time, but for the right time. I got to wait for the right time. We wait for the right time to ask for a raise. We wait for the right time to make an investment. We wait for the right time to tell someone that we love them. We wait for the right time to move, the right time to start a business, the right time to take a class. We're just waiting for the perfect time. Meanwhile, we're waiting for the perfect moment. While we're waiting, someone else gets the promotion or the raise or makes the deal or runs off with the man or woman of our dreams because we didn't call, okay? Somebody else buys their dream home, starts a business that makes millions. Maybe we need to get used to the idea that now is probably as right a time as there ever going to be. Or how about this one? I was waiting until I was sure it was the best thing to do. That's one a lot of do. You know, if we find ourselves waiting until we are absolutely, positively, 100% sure that it is the absolute right and best thing to do, we're going to miss out on a lot of stuff. Maybe we already have. Whenever I hear somebody saying this, it's kind of interesting. To me, is this the best thing to do? What it means to me is that they're choosing comfort over possibility. Comfort over possibility. They're choosing their safe, secure, present situation over the possibility of growth, excitement, and opportunity. Now, there's always a chance that we might fail, okay? That's just part of life. But there's also a chance that things might fall apart if we don't do anything and stay right where we are. That's why the philosopher Elbert Hubbard, really interesting guy if you haven't heard of him, he said, "The greatest mistake you can make in life is to be continually afraid that you'll make one." It's a great statement. It's really a great statement. Now, sometimes we find ourselves waiting for someone else to make a decision first. Okay, we say that we need to know what they're going to be doing so we can make ours. But what we're really saying is we want them to make our decision. We are. And the dangerous thing about that way of thinking is that there are a whole lot of people in the world who are perfectly happy to make all of your decisions for you. All right? Teachers, preachers, politicians, News reporters, marketing experts, family members, lovers, and friends, and the list goes on and on and on. I mean, that kind of waiting can take a bunch of different forms. For example, we wait to see what the company is going to do. We wait to see what the diagnosis is going to be. We wait to see what the economy is going to be before we start to prepare ourselves for a new job or a new career. And we're waiting for that to happen. Meanwhile, the things we aren't doing, like going online, going to the library, find out different things we can do, calling up an art school, see what classes they have, a language school so we can start to learn a language to take the trip we want to take, all those things. We don't take that step. In the Talmud, which is the Hebrew sacred text, I know some of you were raised that way, it's got one of my favorite metaphysical sayings. It says, if not now, when? If not me, who? That's a great mantra. Whenever you're sitting there and find yourself hesitating. If we find ourselves one day feeling like we're standing in front of a closed door and we can't get up the nerve or the energy or the enthusiasm to even try the handle to see if it's locked or if it's unlocked, what are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? I mean, even an automatic door will not open unless you start to walk through it. You ever notice that? Try it at Kroger, Publix, wherever you are. Now, we also have a tendency to wait until we have enough money. Some of us do that, which shows a clear lack of understanding of all the universal laws related to prosperity and abundance. Because any successful person who knows anything about finance will tell you that you don't need to have money before you can make money. Some people tell you that. You don't need money because if you have a money issue, if you're feeling financially stressed, which you can be no matter how much money you have, you don't really have a money problem. You have an idea problem. You have an idea problem. And it isn't that we don't have any ideas. We've all got lots of ideas. Psychologists tell us that we have like 55,000 ideas in our mind in any given day. Okay, the problem is 54,997 of them are the same ones we've had every day for the last 5 years. That's the problem. And the other three, we go, nah, that won't work. And we dump them out. We just haven't yet latched on to the right kind of idea, which are the ones that produce value. That produce value. But they're always available to us because nobody has a monopoly on good ideas. It's simply that we may not be doing what we need to do in the moment to expose ourselves to enough people and possibilities and new ways of thinking that just might inspire us with the kind of ideas we need. That's all it really is. Now, another statement that makes me cringe, I guess because I've been in metaphysics doing this stuff for so long, is when I hear people say, I'm waiting for the Spirit to move me. Okay? Don't you just love that one? I mean, from a spiritual perspective, and I say this with deep compassion, that is one of the dumbest, most non-productive, self-defeating statements we can make. Because it's blaming God for our problems. It's blaming God for our problems. Not that God really cares who we blame. You know, God, it won't bother God at all. It's just that it is a waste of our God-given intelligence. I have, in the past, known people that I've done counseling with back when I was doing that, people who would come in and they have no job, no money, their health is bad, and they have a disastrous relationship or no relationship, who say to me in counseling, I'm just waiting for God to tell me what he wants me to do next. You know, I kind of want to hit him over the head with a stick. Just you sit there, are you listening to yourself? Here's a newsflash. God already told us what wants us to do, okay? In fact, if we were born with an instruction manual tattooed onto our arm, this is what it would say. Are you ready? Get your pen, start writing on your arm, okay? Get out there and enjoy yourself. That would be first. Take some chances, do some things that you love to do. I know you're running out of room here, okay? But be around people who love and support you. Stop complaining, start creating, and do it now. That would be the instruction manual written on our arm. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what perfectly normal people, all right, of ordinary means have accomplished in the world simply by doing something now and then doing something else and doing something else until something incredibly wonderful happens, which it eventually does. I mean, it's also amazing how many people of extraordinary intelligence and incredible talent end up on their deathbed having done none of the wonderful, powerful, creative things that they were perfectly capable of doing. Brilliant people, marvelous people. Alan Cohen, the same author I spoke of earlier, writes this. He said, We are masters at finding all manner of excuses and rationalizations for postponing our joy and not fulfilling our purpose. Really a powerful statement. I mean, the question is never whether or not we have the ability to live our vision, all right, and make our dreams come true, because we all do, every single one of us. The real question is, when are we going to do it? When are we going to do it? You see, as we go through life, timing is not a divine decision made by God or the fates or whoever. It's a personal choice. Timing is a personal choice, and it's a choice that is ours and ours alone. Now or later? Now or never for some people? What's our decision? Or think of it this way. If we took every single moment of our life, let's say the waking moments, let's say half of the waking moments of our life, okay, just that much, and filled these moments with something, with anything that contributed even the smallest amount to our joy, our prosperity, and our success, what do you think your life would look like in a year or two even? Probably pretty amazing, don't you think? I certainly do. On the other hand, if we keep putting off the decisions and the effort and the pain, which there may be some, until our stars align up there, until the fear goes away, or until we feel comfortable, the rest of our life will probably end up looking a whole lot like it looks right now. Okay? And if that's okay with you, that's okay with me. I am well aware that on any given Sunday, and I've been doing this about 20 years, while I'm standing up here talking about spiritual things that, you know, that I do, some of you are sitting out there with unfulfilled dreams that have been gnawing at you for years. Don't give me a show of hands. I don't want to know, okay? But for years, all right? And some of you have gotten very good at ignoring those dreams, while some of you may be very close to making a decision to move forward. I'm really, really close. But then there are always a few people who have been very close to making a decision for years and years and years. However we are dealing with that ambivalence, which is what it is, the inability to make a decision, there is no right or wrong. There really isn't. As long as we are doing whatever we're doing or not doing whatever we're not doing with honesty, integrity, and confidence. Another word for confidence is courage, with the courage to move forward. I mean, it's perfectly fine if we don't think we have the strength or whatever to make a decision now. It's okay if we decide to stay in an unhappy situation until someone else makes a decision. That doesn't make us a bad person. There's really nothing wrong with it. But what we do need to realize is that the longer we wait to act, the more difficult it's going to be. The more we're going to have to work to overcome our own previous rationalizations and justifications for not doing anything. The longer we stay locked into a self-limiting mindset or a certain limited belief system, the longer we tell everyone why we're doing this instead of that, trying to convince both them and us that we're doing the right thing by not doing anything, the harder it will be for us when we finally reach the moment to move. That's what happens. That's the way it works. Now, we talk a lot in this teaching about living in the moment. You've heard me say that a number of times. But living in the moment is only a good thing as long as you're actually living and not just taking up room. Not just taking up room. There are a lot of people in the world who died 20 years ago. They just haven't quit walking, talking, and breathing yet. Okay? Their spirit's dead, even though they're still moving. Okay? The spiritual truth of our being is that anytime we want, we have the ability to use what we have already been given to create whatever we want to create. Bottom line, that's the truth. So, with that being true, all right, let me close by asking you this. Think about this over the next few days, okay? What do you want to do in life that you haven't done? That's not a difficult question, okay? I doubt if everybody here has done everything in life that they want to do at this point. Where do you want to go in the world that you haven't gone? That's another question, okay? Where do you really want to live? And what kind of people do you want to live around? What kind of work do you want to be doing? What kind of car do you really want to drive? What kind of a person do you want to spend your life with? Those are important questions. But those things are not going to happen on their own. Let me say that again. They are not going to happen on their own. Right now, in this moment, today, what is it? October 1st, okay? 2017 is the day that you have been waiting for, okay? I was going to bring in a sign and say, you need a sign? Here's a sign, okay? This is a sign, all right? And whether you realize it or not, you are the one that you've been waiting for to make it happen. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is, and so it is. Okay, thank you. All right, let's just take a few moments here. I know some of these questions can be difficult for some of us, depending on where you are in your life. That's all right. Be at peace with these ideas, because this is really divine intelligence showing up, not from the words I said necessarily, but from the ideas that came up in your mind. This is divine intelligence revealing to you who and what you are. It is the opportunity we have to recognize that infinite possibility is not just a theoretical idea. It is something that we have. We have the ability to make decisions, to take actions, to do things, to not do things that end up transforming our present experience. We are not fixed in place. We are not fixed in time. Each one of us is in a fluid motion that we call life. Our life is constantly changing, and if it's staying in one place, it's only because we're treading water. So as we begin to move, we begin to open our eyes and our ears and our heart and begin to see the world in an incredibly different way. We begin to see people around us in different ways, not as people that we need to argue with or people we need to support or not support, but simply see them as the universe giving us information. We take that information and we move with it. We are not passive beings. We are active beings. We are meant to do things, but the first thing we need to do is to think and to know and to be aware. That's where it all begins. So we allow ourselves to become aware of our dreams and desires. We allow ourselves to believe that they are possible. And then we allow ourselves to do whatever needs to be done. It's that simple. That is spiritually living, each one of us. I am grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for these ideas that feed my soul and allow me to transform my present existence. I'm grateful for all the people around me who are my teachers. Every person, everywhere. Knowing this, I accept these ideas as my own because they're true for every single one of us. And I release them into consciousness, letting them do their good and perfect work from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.